Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Today's episode has been sponsored by Jay McLachlan. Jay McLachlan is a timeless lifestyle brand with incredible style and a spirit of connection. I am obsessed with Jay McLachlan and have been so honored that they are sponsoring my Zibbyverse tour. It just so happens that the tour goes to so many communities and areas of the country that have Jay McLachlan stores. And I love that the brand is philanthropic through Jay McLachlan's local and loyal programming. Host store events to give back to organizations that are meaningful to Jay McLachlan's local communities. I also love the fact that the clothes are just so chic. They make me feel polished and modern. And the best part is that most of the line comes in fabrics that don't wrinkle. I especially love the dresses, the cashmere sweaters, the other sweaters. You'll see them all over my Instagram. I typically tag at Jay McLachlan. And so you can check it out. It is absolutely one of my favorite brands, and I am over the moon excited to be working with them. In fact, I want to share the love with all of you. Jay McLachlan is giving 20% off new customers and listeners of my podcast with special code ZIBBY20. Capital ZIBBY 20. That's 20% off for new customers and listeners of the podcast with special code capital Z Zibby 20. Take advantage of it today. My favorites are this white open long cashmere sweater that I've been wearing on every flight that I've taken on this tour. I have a blue with light blue horizontal striped sweater, several dresses I even wore on Good Morning America. Check it out, Jay McLachlan. Thanks so much.
Hi, I'm Zibby Owens, and you're listening to the award-winning podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. If you like this podcast, you will love my new anthology called Moms Don't Have Time to Have Kids. Check it out, and you'll hear from 49 authors about all sorts of things moms don't have time to do. All the authors have been on this podcast. Also, check out my TikTok, at with Zibby and Tracy, my other podcast, Sex Talk with Zibby and Tracy. Check out Moms Don't Have Time to Write on Medium. And of course, my new publishing company called Zibby Books. And now back to our daily author interview site and a quick hello from some of my kids.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello. Enjoy the show. Chloe Shaw is the author of What is a Dog? A memoir. Chloe lives in Connecticut with her husband, two kids, and two dogs. What is a Dog is her literary debut.
Welcome, Chloe. Thanks so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss What is a Dog?
Thank you.
I was crying in the first chapter of this book, which is when I know I love a book. It's so good. You're such a good writer. It's so amazing and emotional and beautiful. So anyway, bravo to you.
Thank you.
Why don't you tell listeners a little about what your book is about and what inspired you to write this memoir?
So the book is about the six dogs that I've been lucky enough to have in my life, two of whom I still have. And it really was inspired by an essay I wrote about Booker, who's on the cover of the book, the dog that my husband had when we met. And he was kind of the dog that, you know, I had a beloved dog in my childhood who carried me through my whole, really from like 5 years old through up to college, like almost the day I left for college, she died. And I'm an only child, and I lived in a loving but quiet household. You know, there wasn't a lot of shared emotions, and I learned to kind of lean on Agatha, my Scotty, to kind of express myself and be in my room with her and spend time under our piano with her in dinner parties when I didn't, you know, I was a little shy, a little antisocial at times, but also could perform when I needed to. So there was a lot of back and forth with that. And I felt like, honestly, she really helped me work some of that out. But Booker, so when I met him, he was 6 years old, and I just became his immediate dog mom. And as an adult, and I wasn't, you know, I wouldn't say, I think Agatha of more as my sibling. And, you know, she was like my sister, my friend. And I really felt like Booker's mom when I came into Matt and Booker's life. And I had to take responsibility. I mean, things like going to the vet, and, you know, he had several surgeries, and then he was starting to fail, you know, and I really had to show up in a way that I never had. Even when my beloved grandfather died, you know, I still regret that I wasn't able to show up more for him or for that experience. It was just too much. I hadn't really learned how to face that kind of grief. And Booker really taught me that, I have to say. I just felt like, you know, Matt and I dug for a week. We dug a huge hole in our backyard for a week, knowing we were going to say goodbye to him at the end of all that. And, you know, I just let myself go through all of the feelings instead of avoid them. So he really, you know, it took me a couple of years to write about him, but I wrote an essay that was published. I'd never planned on writing a memoir. That was not my idea. An editor found the essay and asked me to. And I, of course, said immediately yes. And then I thought, oh my gosh, what did I just say? Yes. But it was, even writing the book, I mean, for, you know, it took a couple years, but it was like just the most therapeutic thing. And it also allowed me to think of all the dogs in my life in this way that I anthropomorphize, I do all the things we all do with our dogs, but it really actually allowed me the time and space to think about what they really have meant to me, and why are we so attached to them? And why is this, you know, I mean, so many people have dogs, especially I know in the pandemic, I know a lot have come home with people, which is great, but it really allowed me the space to think about that on almost a more philosophical level.
I think that's what was so... One of the things, as my dog like shakes and rattles in the middle, that made it so poignant was like the macro like extrapolation of like what it all means, right? It's like, what does it mean? Like, what do dogs know? What do we know? Like, are we, and just the sort of souls sort of circulating all of that. It just was beautiful. It's like, I mean, anyway, tell me about the title for 2 seconds. What is a dog? Did you have other titles? Why did you pick this title? I know it's discussed, but I'm just curious.
Yeah, sure. I will say, just, I have to say this. Moms Don't Have Time to Have Kids is my favorite title.
Thank you.
Like the best ever.
Thank you.
As the mom of two young kids. So it came out of the essay that I wrote. I kept asking, there was kind of a repetitive meditation almost, you know, what is a dog? Like, mm-hmm. You know, at one point, you know, I grew up, so when I was born, my parents had a dog. She was old and she was their first baby. She was an Afghan hound. And I never knew life without dogs. You know, she and I don't know that I really bonded with her. She died when I was about 4 or 5. And I don't think she was thrilled with my arrival, but she was kind to me. She wasn't, you know, she wasn't aggressive in any way. So I think
you had like one picture or something of you guys together, right? And that was it.
That's right. And, you know, but she was a big, Afghans are big. So it was a big presence in our house. And we had an apartment in Brooklyn at the time. Well, I was born in Miami, so it was first there, but I don't remember Miami. I moved when I was 18 months old to Brooklyn with my parents and Easy, the Afghan hound. And she, when she died, you know, when I was thinking about that experience, I do remember her. I just kept asking, like, I should back up a little bit. So my editor was really helpful in saying, I want you to think about this book as a meditation on dogs. And that was just, I kept coming back to that line. And when I started to think about her and my experience with her, it suddenly occurred to me, like, it's so interesting, you know, kids who don't grow up with certain, you grow up the way you grow up. So I grew up with dogs. Some people don't. But at some point I must've been like, what is this thing that doesn't look like us? And so it was really just a line that came out of the essay when I imagined the first time I thought, what is a dog? Or like, yeah, you know, what is this?
So love it. Yeah. And tell me about your relationship, because I know you mentioned in the acknowledgments to John Irving, who's like, I'm like the biggest fan of ever. Uh-huh. What is he, just like a neighborhood friend of yours? And you, what? No.
No. So I was very lucky enough to, my first job out of college from 97 to 99, I was his assistant and I worked with him and his wife, and I lived in Vermont nearby, but I worked out of their house and I would take care of their house and their dog Dickens.
Yep.
Whenever they left, you know, the country to travel or whatever. So it was very special. I know, it was a very special experience.
Wow.
And he taught me so, I mean, truly, he's the one. I mean, I've had such wonderful mentors. Jim Shepherd in college was certainly, he shepherded me that job, but in terms of my writing, but John really taught me just watching him and observing him and, you know, working with him every day, the kind of athleticism of writing, you know, like it's not, I don't know. I took it very preciously for a while, as a lot of us do. And I would be in Brooklyn coffee shops with my computer, like everyone else, just kind of trying to write. And, you know, stuff happened. I mean, I feel like it was all practice for sure. But John, it was kind of eye-opening, because I was also an athlete as a younger person. I'm still athletic, but I was a squash player and a softball player. And so I knew about practice and I knew about, you know, honing your skills and all of that, but and putting the time in. But John had such a diligent schedule. You know, he would get up at, you know, early in the morning, he'd already be at the type. At that time, he used a typewriter. And what was hilarious is I was so nervous that part of my interview would be to see how I type, because I type with two fingers. I never learned how to type properly. And so does he. He types with two fingers.
Oh my gosh.
I think he now uses a computer, but he used a typewriter, this like amazing typewriter, and he would just click it out. And I would transcribe all of that into the computer upstairs.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
What book was he working on then?
A Widow for 1 Year.
Oh my God. That was so good. I think that was one of my favorites. Oh. And Prayer for Owen Meany. But anyway.
Yeah. Prayer for, oh my gosh. But yeah. Garp
is I loved A Widow for 1 Year. I remember when that came out.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what he was working on. But his taking writing not as a precious thing and just like, and kind of a job. Actually, I heard, so I listen to a lot of comedian podcasts these days. I really relate to, I don't know. I think it's the humor, but the darkness too in it all.
Yep.
Anyway, Mike Birbiglia is one of my favorites. And he said the other day, something like, treat it like it's a job until it is.
Yeah.
Loved that so much, because I think that's what John, I don't know. I just feel like it is a job. I mean, you treat it like a job and you just show up. It's not, you know, you can definitely have moments of inspiration. It's not like that doesn't exist, but it helped me to see that when you take the kind of magic dream out of it in a way,
yeah,
and you just keep showing up every day. I mean, some days are going to be terrible. Some days are going to be great, but you just keep showing up.
Wow. What a way to sort of enter the literary world. So what did you do after that?
Then I went to work for Vogue magazine for 2 years, which was a really good experience. It definitely was not like a great fit for me where I was. It was, meaning that I was in the features department, you know, working on cultural pieces and, you know, books and theater and dance and movies. And it was really fun for 2 years. I just knew it wasn't a long-term situation.
Did you dress for the part?
I mean, I tried as best as I could. and it was not, and I failed.
I interned at Vanity Fair one summer and I just don't dress very well. I mean, I am just not that, I don't know. I did my best too.
I think I did my best in those 2 years. And then it was, it was fun to walk over to the fashion side. It was funny. The office is in two sections. And so the features department's on one side and the fashion is on the other side. At least it was back in the day. And it was always fun to go back there. And you might run into like Serena Williams trying on some gown. And you're like, oh my gosh. Wow. I mean, it was amazing. But I was also like, oh gosh. I just want to be in my jeans right now. Like, I enjoy dressing up sometimes, but it's not my natural habitat.
I get it. And but then what?
Great experience. Then I got my MFA at Bennington in fiction writing, and that's a low residency program. So you're not on campus full time. So you have to be there for 2 10-day sessions, once in June and once in January for 2 years. So the first year I actually lived here in Connecticut. And then the second year I moved to LA for a year just because my friends were moving to LA and I could be anywhere. And I just thought I'd never do something like that. And I lasted 364 days. As my uncle was driving me out of town, I was like, wow, I didn't last a full year. And it was such a fun year, but I am just such an East Coaster. I don't know. It just was not my thing.
Which part of LA did you live in?
North Hollywood.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I have similar things in that I grew up in New York. I spent a summer at Bennington doing a fiction writing program when I was 16.
Oh, 16.
And then fiction and photography. Okay. And then after college, I lived in LA for 2 years. So I made it 2 years.
Wow, you made it 2 years.
I made it 2 years. And I was like, I miss my home. But now I spend a lot of time there and I like going back and forth. But like, I always feel like this is home and like that's vacation land. And I love vacation land, but then I need to like get a dose of home.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. As kids get older, some things about parenting can get easier. I mean, not many, but some. But others don't, like having conversations about money. Point is, kids won't really know how to manage their money unless they're actually in charge of it. And that is where Greenlight can help. Greenlight is a debit card and money app made for families. Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on their kids' spending and saving while kids and teens build money confidence and lifelong financial literacy skills. With the Greenlight app, kids can learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely thanks to games that teach money skills in a fun and accessible way. I got Greenlight debit cards for my kids. The greatest thing, you can actually add their photos that take up half the card. So when I handed the cards to the kids, they were like, this is so exciting. So they look great. Unfortunately, I only put the required 2 cents on at the beginning to make sure they worked. So the kids were like, well, what should I spend my 2 cents on? Anyway, millions of parents and kids are learning about money on Greenlight. It's the easy, convenient way for parents to raise financially smart kids and families to navigate life together. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/Zibby. That's greenlight.com/Zibby to try Greenlight for free. Greenlight.com/Zibby.
It's so, that's exactly the way I felt. I felt like the phrase that keeps coming to mind is like, I didn't want to put my roots down there. My roots were back here. Mm-hmm. And honestly, it's even weather related. I would wake up, I mean, of all things, I'd wake up and see the sun and be like, oh my God, it's another sunny day. You know, it's like, I didn't know what time of year it was. I didn't know. I mean, they have sort of seasons, like, but it just, I really longed for that cycle that I've known my whole life. So yeah, I came back.
And then when did you, I'm trying to get to your book. Yeah, okay. through the life story up till the book. So what happened? Then you came back, you did your MFA. I didn't even know you could get an MFA in 20 days a year. That's pretty awesome. And then
2 years though, I was working the whole time, but you can be away from the actual campus.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then what?
And then I came back to Brooklyn and I ended up getting a job at a law firm called Skadden Arps.
I've heard of it.
A word processor, which it was really, aside from John Irving being his assistant and being in that house with them and being in their family, I really, along with that, it was the work community was so great. We worked for all the lawyers, obviously, just honestly editing their documents. They would just hand us documents. We'd format them. You know, I had to learn all this stuff. Still typing with two fingers, which I tried to hide, which I guess I did for a lot of years. But all of my coworkers were aspiring writers, musicians, artists, actors. You know, it just was so it was such a wonderful community of people to be around. I did have to learn. So when I started, you have to start with at least one graveyard shift. So I had to work from 11 p.m. to 7 a.m., which I'd never done in my life.
Oh.
That took getting used to. But, you know, it allowed me time to write. I mean, basically, I just committed at that point to trying to get some writing done. You know, the job paid well and it was flexible. And then I ended up actually going full time there. So I just worked during the daytime. And that's when I met Matt and Booker, who I, you know, as you read, I guess, I had just come out of a bad breakup and did not have any interest in meeting this guy at all. But my beloved friend from college was like, no, you need to meet this guy. And she just wouldn't let up. And then she finally said, I don't think I told you he has a dog. And I said, I'd meet the dog, you know? And so we went on a walk together, the three of us, actually the four, she has a dog. She had a dog at that time, JJ too. And it was like instantaneous. And we went to college together. We just didn't know each other. I was a freshman and he was a senior. And once we kind of got talking, I realized we had some friends in common, but I didn't know him in college. So that was it. And Booker, you know, so that's why also to come back to what you asked me initially, what about this book? I mean, Booker also is why I agreed to even meet my husband.
Wow.
So
wow.
It was pretty special. And he really was one of those dog of dogs. Yeah.
Well, your description of, you know, is this dog's quality of life worth living? How do I know? Like, when does the dog tell you, you know, and your line about how, you know, animals just know or something like, but how do you know as the human when you're responsible for that? And the other dog, like coming to say, oh my gosh. I mean, my husband's filming a movie right now. And I was like on the set for one day and I was chatting with one of the people on the crew. And of course, as I do, I'm like, oh, what are you, you know, is anybody reading anything? What are you reading? And she's like, oh, I'm too busy to read, you know, with all these projects. And I was like, yeah, well, actually my podcast is Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. And she's like, oh, haha. Well, I'm a dog mom. I'm not a real mom. And I was like, oh, I have the best book for you. You have to read What is a Dog? I had just started it. And she's like, oh, okay. And I was like, where do you usually get your books? And she's like, well, usually I just get them off this app at the library, you know, and then it like downloads. I don't even know. Anyway, I was like, I'm just going to like send you a copy. So I like took out my phone. I was like, just put your address here on Amazon. And I'm just going to, I shouldn't even say Amazon, but I did do it because it was really fast. And I was like, anyway, I'm sorry. I will repent. But anyway, I had her enter her address. And anyway, I sent her a book and it got there yesterday. So
sweet. Thank you.
But I know she'll love it because anybody who loves dogs will love this book. It's like, it can't help but tug at your heartstrings and raise really important questions. My brother's dog is like on his last legs, poor Raleigh. And I mean, it's just such an important reflection on such an emotional, important time of life that doesn't get elevated to the mainstream conversation that often. So,
well, and yeah, I guess that's what I, you know, for so long, I just, you know, avoided that kind of feeling, you know, even with Agatha when she died when I was 18 and my mom took her off and I said goodbye to her, but I think we all knew she was not coming back, but she took her off. And I even reflecting on what that day was like for my mom, you know, just to go by herself. I mean, having now gone through Booker, and so when I met Matt, I had two cats who I loved, and one of them, both of them died within the last 5 years, but one of them died like right as the pandemic was starting. I just took him by myself to the vet and I knew it was time. He was really sick. And he was my first baby. I had him when I was back in Brooklyn. So he was 15 though. He lived a nice long life, but I didn't even have time to mourn him. I mean, it was like, that was the week my kids came home from school and just never went back. I mean, not never, they're back now, but you know, for a really long time. And, you know, I think I've always felt like, you know, I have friends who've lost children. I have friends who've lost spouses. We all know people in our lives with that heartache. And I would never compare those griefs. They're different, but they also are both very real. And so I also just wanted to reach out to people who feel that. And it almost feels sometimes embarrassing to feel so sad about a pet dying or being sick. One of my dogs, Otter, has had two leg surgeries in the last 8 weeks. And I've been a dog mom, dog nurse for like, oh, so much. And he's had a rough time. He's doing well now, but I've been in tears many nights about it with my husband. And I think because maybe writing the book, I feel like that's valid. It's okay.
It is valid.
It's very upsetting. Mm-hmm. And to not be able to communicate easily too and be like, you're going to be okay. This is going to hurt for a while, but you're going to be okay. You can't communicate in the same way. So you have to adjust. But,
well, it is 100% shared by so many, and that love. I mean, it's, you know, there is something like the act itself of taking care of something engenders love between people, babies, pets, all of it, right? The more you take care of something, the more you love them. Anyway, and any time that love is threatened to be taken away, that's huge. That's the most painful thing there is. It's like losing love. What's worse than that? Anyway, okay. Do you have any advice for aspiring authors?
Just don't stop. Don't, you know, I mean, it's pretty simple and been said many times, but also what I said, I mean, I'm 46 years old, and in high school, when I read Sandra Cisneros's House on Mango Street is when I was like, I want to do this. I don't know how she did this, but I want to do this. And I really haven't stopped. You know, there've been plenty of failures, but I think don't stop, don't give up. But also what I was saying earlier about John Irving, I think is really important. And not make it just too precious, but show up, you know, whether it's like you have 1 hour in the morning or you set a time, you almost make it a little bit regimented. That's worked for me. And I know it's not for everybody, but it's worked for me to be, you know, now that I have kids, it's a little different, but I would always just get up. I would stumble toward the computer. I would get some coffee, stumble toward the computer, and just let myself, like, that was the first thing before I looked at anything on the internet, before I talked to anybody, before I did a single thing. I just let my mind work and wake up. My husband has a poet friend who he used to wake himself up at 4 a.m. to write because he said his internal editor wasn't awake yet, which I thought was so wonderful. That used to be, I don't quite do that anymore because of kids and all the other responsibilities, but It was my favorite time to work, was like first thing before you even know what's going on in the world.
Yeah.
It just feels like this pure moment. So I think that those are my two.
Amazing. By the way, have you talked to Jenna Bloom? Do you know her? The author who wrote Woodrow on the Bench?
No.
Okay. You two have to do an event together. Her book came out yesterday and she's amazing. She runs A Mighty Blaze also, which I'll email you right after this together. Okay. Actually, I don't have your email, but if you get to my email through your publicist or something, then, but you two should definitely, and I'm happy to like moderate or something, but there should be a dog love event somewhere between the two of you. Cool. So let me know if you want me to try to do it together. Okay. But you two should talk. Okay. All right. Well, have a great day. And thanks for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books.
Thank you so much, Sibby.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Sibby Owens and at Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Also sign up for my newsletter at SibbyOwens.com and sign up for my virtual book club and meet lots of authors on Zoom every other week. Thanks so much to Steve and Ryan at Texture Sound for the sound editing. And thank you to Morning Moon Productions for providing this fantastic intro and outro music.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.